Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and once again it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Lucy Commissar. This is Side 1 of For the Record program number 650, Analyzing the Causes of the Crash. Again, an interview with Lucy Commissar. This has been recorded on October 26th of the year 2008. Lucy, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you very much.
Since we last spoke, which was in early 2007, one could say the economic waves have crashed offshore, so to speak, and the economy has taken a major downturn, and there have been a lot of discussion about just exactly what caused it. But in an interview that we did in October of 2005, we analyzed AIG, one of the many large financial companies that has gone under, and specifically you spoke about some of its offshore activities. Before we get into the main body of the discussion, Lucy, we should probably refresh people's memory about what offshore is. It's not a maritime term. So give us a working definition for our purposes of offshore.
Offshore refers to a financial center. And there are about 170 of them around the world. Very often, I meant 70 around the world. And they are places where you can set up a company or open a bank account without putting down your real name. Maybe you use a nominee. Maybe it's even a person from the bank who's using his or her name. And these places subscribe to secrecy rules so that some law enforcement agent coming to follow a drug money or some crooked money may be told by the people in Liechtenstein, I'm sorry, we have bank secrecy and you can't look at the records of the person that you think has put money into one of our banks. And also they will set up companies that don't have the name of the real owners. Although, by the way, we have discovered that this happens in many American states as well. People can set up companies without the real names, places like Delaware, Montana, and even in states where it's illegal, but that's not enforced. But it is, at least in this country, if somebody thinks they, law enforcement thinks that some company is being used for some crooked aim, they can go and with a court order, they can get information about it, which you cannot do in these offshore places. They started being called offshore because initially they were some offshore islands off the coast of England, the Channel Islands, or they were in the Caribbean. But now it includes places onshore like Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, Monaco.
So offshore really means out of the reach or outside of the scrutiny of regulators.
That's right.
That's basically what it means. Now, AIG, in an interview that we did again in October of 2005 and recently rebroadcast on many of these stations, you spoke about AIG, the insurance giant, and some of their offshore shenanigans. Before we get into what has taken place with AIG since, Lucy, let's briefly touch on what AIG was doing offshore.
Well, one of the things that they were doing, according to an insurance investigator, was helping their clients move money offshore where it could be enjoyed without paying U.S. taxes. In exchange for that, they would get higher commissions. This is the way that it worked. And I'll tell you about a particular case because it turned out to be a model that according to the insurance investigator that I spoke to, they used frequently. There was a company called NVF. It was a Vulcan rubber company. Maybe it's even still there, in Delaware. And it was being run by a man named Victor Posner. He was a very crooked guy. He worked in some schemes with Michael Milken and Ivan Boesky, two famous Wall Street crooks. But he was caught in some scam in the early 1990s. He was prosecuted for a fraudulent takeover scheme, which was part of a Milken-Boesky operation. So he had to pay $4 million to the fraud victims. And he was not allowed to serve as an officer or director of any publicly held company. Now, this NVF company was a publicly held company, so he had to get out. So there were some people that came in to take control, new managers, and they hired some people to take a look at what had been going on. One of the people they hired was an insurance agent, and he had to look at the company's insurance policies. He found out that the company was paying AIG, National Union Fire of Pittsburgh, a subsidiary of AIG, substantially over the market price for workman's compensation. AIG was reinsuring, because insurance companies reinsure so that if a lot of claims come in for a particular policy, they can lay some of them off on the reinsurer. So it's an insurer of the insurance company. They were reinsuring through Chesapeake Insurance. Well, that turned out to be an offshore reinsurance company owned by Posner in Bermuda. So in fact, what happened, the Posner company was buying insurance from AIG, which was charging too much. AIG was buying a policy from this offshore company owned by Posner. So the AIG would keep a good commission, and the rest of the money that it paid to the Posner company would be kept by Posner, and nobody would see it because this is Bermuda. And the whole payment that Posner made to AIG was a business expense written off. And they were also, by the way, when there are reduced profits for the company because there are higher expenses, this hurts the investors as well, including pension funds that might have investments in that company. So the insurance agent who was looking into this canceled bad policy with AIG, but the Delaware Insurance Department did not do anything, didn't make the scam public. They didn't take any action against AIG. AIG was just too powerful. The person I spoke to, who was an insurance department regulator there, said this was not an isolated case with NVF, that company. He said AIG did that a lot. AIG helped companies set up offshore captive reinsurance companies. A captive is owned by the company that it insures. And he said AIG would then overcharge on insurance, pay the reinsurance premium to the captive, giving the captive owner tax-free offshore income. And that is what AIG did. It would be very interesting for the people that now own AIG, which is us, the U.S. government, to take a look at policies with captive insurance companies as the reinsurance companies to see whether or not that is going on today. The other scam, which I looked into, where AIG was dodging U.S. taxes and regulations, involved also reinsurance. Insurance companies, as I explained, have to move some of their risk onto reinsurance companies. So a claim comes in above a certain amount, they can get the money from the reinsurance company. And also, they're required by state laws, which is what regulate insurance companies, to keep a certain amount of capital available to pay out claims. If they have good reinsurance, they can keep less capital on hand because they can get money to pay claims from the reinsurance. If they have less capital on hand, they can use the capital that they don't need to keep to make investments, and therefore they can make profits. Well, what happened was AIG, this was in the mid-80s, two of its reinsurers failed, and it would have had to stop writing new business because it would have to have a certain ratio of assets to risk, and it no longer had the reinsurance on the risk. Getting a new reinsurer was going to take time, could be difficult, it would be expensive. So Hank Greenberg, then the CEO of AIG, persuaded several of his business friends to set up a company into which would be the AIG reinsurer. It was a fake company. The company was launched with a private sale of shares organized by Goldman Sachs, then headed by Robert Rubin. These friends of Greenberg, just front men, were loaned the money to buy shares that were risk-free. They were told they'd get a certain amount of dividends, but if the stock ever went down in this fake company, it would be taken off their hands. This was totally illegal because the company was actually controlled by AIG. So it's not moving risk out of your company if one of your own companies really has the same risk. They control the company. It was registered in Barbados. It's an offshore venue and minimal regulations. American regulators couldn't go there to find out what was going on. But a Delaware Insurance Department regulator looked into all of this and did a report in 1996 that said that Coral Reef, this company, may be an affiliate of AIG, and it showed how AIG had played a role in the creation of Coral Reef. It had been the buddies of Hank Greenberg who'd been persuaded to invest, and that its purpose was to reinsure risks for AIG companies. That's all. and almost all its business came from AIG. It was managed by an AIG subsidiary. And so the inspector said, this is not a transfer of risk. It has to come off the books. Well, insurance departments in New York and Pennsylvania agreed with Delaware. But Hank Greenberg was so powerful that he stonewalled and prevented any action for 8 years. By that time, they were able to shift to another reinsurer. There was no penalty ever levied against them by any of the insurance departments. Again, his power was awesome. So this is another area which suggests that investigators now, American investigators, who are looking into a company called AIG, which is now controlled by the U.S. government, they need to look into this. They need to look into the history of these particular cases, including Coral Reef, and they need to look into, in general, how AIG has used reinsurance, as we can see, using offshore venues to cook the books, to help clients evade taxes, and itself to evade regulations.
Obviously, Lucy, with AIG having tottered, it didn't collapse completely, but the rescue came courtesy of the taxpayers, i.e. UI and the members of the listening audience. And it might be, maybe this will seem a little self-righteous or preachy, in which case I'll apologize in advance, but I can't stress strongly enough to members of the listening audience that some of this stuff might seem like this is very abstruse, that it's certainly not something that is meant to be readily comprehensible for the average Jane or John Doe. But these are not things that are way out there and dissociated from the circumstances of one's existence. As complicated and as opaque as some of these things are, they are things that are of significant importance to the average American, because ultimately when these particular branches of these trees bear fruit, we're the ones that are stuck having to pick up the rotten fruit and or eating it. So when we're talking about things like transfer pricing or the Bermuda in view version or some of the things that we've spoken about with Lucy, these are things that have direct, personal, concrete financial implications for members of the audience. So Lucy, we're basically stuck holding AIG's bill.
That's right. And are we going to continue AIG practices that are helping tax evasion for some of its customers? Oh, this would be outrageous, wouldn't it, for the U.S. to own a company which is helping some of its clients cheat on taxes to the U.S.? It ought to go in there right away and see what's going on. I think they will find some similar cases to the Posner one that I described.
There was a case, in fact, there was an article in one of the internet news services just this past week that the bulk of the loan, the first loan that AIG has secured from the U.S. taxpayers, has already been spent. Do you know anything, Lucy, about how that's been spent, what they've spent it on? Has it been well spent, or is it more of the same?
I don't know. I think, you know, that takes some auditors maybe. I don't know that it's been made public. I haven't seen anything that says how they spent the money.
Yeah, I just saw there was a Yahoo story that said that most of it had already been spent. I didn't see anything about exactly how or where. But we're now in a position, potentially, I'm reminded of the Chinese character for crisis, which is composed of the characters for danger and opportunity. Certainly with the financial collapse, Lucy, a lot of people have been justifiably scared about what might happen with all of these huge financial dominoes collapsing one upon the other. But, as you pointed out, with the U.S. government basically in control, in receivership of AIG, with AIG having been one of these major offshore transgressors, to coin a term, this is an opportunity for us to not only straighten out AIG and its books and its finances, but also perhaps to learn and avoid making some of these mistakes in the future.
Yes, it's quite possible that some other insurance companies are doing the same thing with reinsurance. So not only do we want people to go in and see what they're doing and stop it, but maybe this requires some legislation, some regulation. The insurance companies are regulated on a state level that's very weak. The Greenbergs of the world can just sit on these guys. They really don't have too much courage, even when they took steps in the Coral Reef case, it took years, and they just let themselves be walked over by Greenberg. So there needs to be federal, it is a national company, there needs to be federal legislation that deals with these issues. I think to begin with that insurance companies should not be allowed to go to Bermuda and Barbados so they can cheat on taxes. Now, the AIG has several subsidiaries. It has American International Assurance Company Limited in Bermuda, American International Reinsurance Company Limited in Bermuda, AIG Life Insurance Company Limited in Switzerland, AIG Financial Advisor Services in Luxembourg. Well, why are divisions of a U.S. company going to these places so they can cheat on taxes while the company is being bailed out by the American taxpayers? Seems to me that that's the first thing that should be changed. The American government now controls AIG. Even without legislation, it should bring all its companies back to the U.S. There should not be any offshore companies.
That would
be an interesting start now, wouldn't it?
Well, it certainly would. What I was wondering, Lucy, is has there been any concrete legislation? Has anybody taken any initiatives, specific legislative initiatives in that regard?
Well, there is the Stop Tax Haven Abuse Act, whose three sponsors are Carl Levin, Norm Coleman, and Barack Obama. And that basically would say that any company or individual that sets up an offshore operation, if it's shown that the only purpose of this is to evade American taxes, it will be considered for tax purposes as if it were in the United States. If that passed, that is the most powerful legislation in this area that there possibly could be. It's an amazing proposal, and perhaps we have a chance of getting it passed, but that would mean that AIG and other companies, they could keep their subsidiaries in Bermuda and in Switzerland and Luxembourg or Liechtenstein, but for tax purposes, they would be treated as if they were in the United States.
This legislation was sponsored in part by Barack Obama.
Right. There are only three co-sponsors. Levin, Coleman, running for Senate again. He's a senator from Minnesota. And Obama. Just three co-sponsors signed that.
Do you know at what state of the legislative process that bill has arrived at?
It's not anywhere yet. I mean, it's not in committee, or there are no hearings now. It was sponsored and put forward to start people thinking and talking about it, and obviously it will be picked up when Obama wins the election. But it's not at the stage where the sponsors are seriously looking to get more co-sponsors or organizing hearings or anything of the sort.
So we will see what we will see, and that would offer some concrete legislative remedies for the offshore ailment, so to speak.
Indeed. For insurance companies and everything else, and individuals.
Lucy, you've been investigating the securities business and what went wrong, so to speak. And my understanding is that there are some things that you've been investigating that you will be able to speak of in more specific terms than you can right now. But I'd like you to share with us some of the insights that you've been able to gain about things like selling and naked short selling, how this relates to, on the one hand, both offshore shenanigans and offshore doings, and the implications for the recent collapse in the equities markets. Again, one of the things that we should be careful of, Lucy, here is that a lot of people, including yours truly, are not all that familiar with the securities business. So terms like hedge fund, short selling, and naked short selling are not things with which I'm familiar. Probably quite a few members of the listening audience are in the same boat. So as you shed light on this for us, if you could make sure to try to get us up to speed on some of these terms.
Okay. Short selling is when investors sell a stock they don't own. This sounds a little bizarre to begin with on the face of it. How can you sell something you don't own? It's allowed. Some people think it should be not allowed. They hope that the stock price will fall and they will buy it more cheaply and they have to then, they will then deliver it to the buyer. Under SEC rules, they have to deliver it in 3 days. So they're hoping that they buy it today for 10, and in 2 days it's at 8. So they buy it at 8 and deliver it to the person who paid them for it at 10, and they will make 2 as a profit. The problem, aside from the fact of, does it make sense to be able to sell something you don't own? There's something called naked short selling. That is when they sell shares they don't own and do not intend to buy. It used to be that investors would get a piece of paper that say, you have 10 shares in the railroad. It was a real piece of paper. It equaled the 10 shares. Now everything is done electronically, and their broker has on file that they have shares. A naked short selling is done through a device called stock lending. This was organized by the Depository Trust Corporation in New York. That is the agency that moves the shares back and forth. If you buy shares of something and somebody is selling it, it all goes through the Depository Trust Corporation between the various brokers who are our members. You don't have your bank call up the guy that you're selling it to and say, you know, deposit this amount of money in my account in the bank and I'm going to send you the shares. You do it through the DTC, the Depository Trust Corporation. So they, and it's owned by the members, which are the major broker-dealers. When the DTC broker sells shares and can't deliver them, the depository, the DTC, makes arrangements to loan securities to the firm. And it works like this. After the trade occurs, you have sold something, it goes into the clearing system. If the seller doesn't have the securities for the buyer, the depository has a program that goes through all the available shares on where the account holders have said, we will loan out these shares if you need them. They do that because they get a commission. And the DTC, the Depository Trust Corporation, also gets a commission. So they borrow the shares from their members, which are brokerages, and deliver them to the buyer or to the buyer's brokerage. But that's just on paper because they're not really delivered. They're still owned by whoever owned them, right? It's only loaned. So the buyer now thinks he or she has the share because the broker said you do, but the owner had them lent out, was never told that they were lent out, and also thinks he or she has the share. Now, this can be done over and over again with the same shares. The brokers and the DTC get a fee each time, so you can have shares, multiple numbers of the shares in circulation that actually exist. This involves stocks, bonds, currency, strategic metal. Restrictions on short selling. Short selling was one of the reasons, one of the kind of stock manipulation that caused the Depression, and restrictions on short selling were put into the Securities Acts of 1933 and 4. Because of the evidence of the manipulation through short selling. And some people thought it was a massive conspiracy. There's some evidence for that. But when the automatic movement of shares, instead of, they used to have runners going back between the brokerages, exchanging checks and real certificates between the buyers and the sellers' brokers. So now they have electronic system. They have this system of stock lending, where the brokers can borrow the shares, and what sometimes they would maybe borrow them, they said, but they would never actually end up buying them, so they return the borrowed shares to where they belong, and the buyer would and seller would never know. So there were cases where it started out small, that there was naked short selling. People would never actually buy the stock and provide it to the buyer, but it began to increase very seriously. And I talked to an interesting woman named Suzanne Trimbath. She worked for the Depository Trust Corporation, and she said that she found about 5 years ago she met some lawyers, and they started explaining to her about how naked short selling, stock lending, and the use of offshore accounts were being used to manipulate stocks and even to drive some small companies or bigger companies out of business. Because short selling, when you buy stocks, it makes the price go up. Everybody thinks, well, more people want that stock, must be a good stock. Price goes up. When you sell stocks, the price goes down. If you're selling stock, people think, they think it's not a good stock. All these people are selling stocks, it goes down. What happens when you do naked short selling, selling stocks you don't own on a huge scale? You push down the price of companies. And then, of course, if you do buy the share to give to the buyer, it is way down. You can make a huge amount of money through this kind of stock manipulation. And these lawyers said that offshore companies were being used for some of this manipulation. And that was one major issue, particularly with small companies, although now the people from Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, the people who were running those companies, said they were victims of naked short selling. And, of course, with the stock lending, you could short sell repeatedly the same number of shares. Now, one of the symptoms of this is more votes being cast in the annual corporate elections than the actual shares outstanding. Because, you know, Mr. A and Mr. B, or Miss A and Miss C and D, they each think they have shares. So when it comes time for the annual elections, they usually in the spring, their proxies, they ask their broker to give them the proxy, and they want to cast the votes for how many shares they own. Well, it turns out that there are many more shares being voted. There was a study in 2005, a transfer agent who deals with...
Lucy, we are almost out of time here. What I'd like to do would be to interrupt the discussion at this point. Have you tell the audience about your website and whatever projects you would like to alert them to, and we'll continue with this on the other side because we're almost out of time here.
Very good. My website is thecommissarscoop.com, and as I write about this, I will be putting articles online about this subject.
So, in other words, people will be able to go to the Commissar Scoop and read about these very complicated procedures.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still working on these stories, as you indicated. I have written in the past about the AIG, so you can look on the website and the index under AIG and find the details of the cases I described.
Right.
On the issue of naked short selling, I'm working on that now, including some important examples of that.
All
that
righty.
Will take a little while longer.
And that is available at Commissar Scoop.
The Commissar Scoop, yes.
All righty.
Commissar Scoop.
All righty. The Commissar Scoop is where you can find out more about this, and there will be articles for those of you who find some of these machinations to be confusing, and I'm one of them. You'll be able to follow the bouncing ball, so to speak, at a greater length and in greater detail to help scope some of this out. And you will be able to name names, right, Lucy?
Well, some of them, yeah.
All righty.
Yeah.
Well, I think I speak for the audience in saying it'd be fascinating to see just who specifically has been up to no good in some of these gambits. We've been visiting with Lucy Commissar, investigative reporter, and the person who does the Commissar Scoop. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 650, interview with Lucy Commissar about the causes of the crash. This has been recorded on October 26th of 2008. For Lucy Commissar, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.